Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Howard Simon and Jeremy White.
This statement is humbly called, hockey games U.S. play-by-play commentators have utterly ruined.
Howard Simon.
Long ago and far away, when I was a boy, we wore hockey sweaters, not hockey jerseys. And we never sat in locker rooms, dressing rooms they were called. And we didn't have a half wall. What would that be? We had boards. And we got penalties for boarding, not half-walling.
Jeremy White.
Nor did we take a wrister. What an insulting word. We took a wrist shot. Nor did we take a slapper. What an insulting word. We took a slap shot. And not the movie. And no U.S. commentator can speak about magical mittens because most of them never saw a mitten. But I have actually heard them say he looped it in like a real good dunk. These odious phrases are all momentary inventions by American play-by-play announcers who have never played or understood the game.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
That is the perfect open to play because of who is sitting across the table from me in our studio right now. We have a guy who is Canadian and a hockey broadcaster by trade. So you can comment perfectly on whoever this guy was in Parliament. Do you still have that guy's name or something?
I have to look it up again real quick.
What do you think? Is he on target, Mr. Duff?
No. As someone who has worked with so many analysts over the years, there is nothing more refreshing than someone with their own vocabulary.
Yeah, sure.
And putting a new spin on tired cliches.
Right.
And bringing a different energy. And to that point, since we were just talking about NHL Network off air and my days there, when Kevin Weeks arrived on the scene, it was amazing because he was actually still technically playing. He was under contract. He'd season had, you know, ended due to injury with the Devils, I think, at that point in time. And you know, he came into the studio one night and it was just eye-opening for me. And it was, and then, you know, not that I didn't know what Kevin was all about. I think his persona was around him the whole time in his career. But then more and more and more you run into people that knew Kevin and they knew that, you know, anybody would love working with him because he's got such a great way of talking about the game.
He's fun. He makes
he
it entertaining.
An awful lot
you
of
You know,
fun.
It's not, I don't mean to say boring hockey analysis, but you know, he's got a style to him.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
certainly got energy. I've always loved his work on NHL Network.
Yeah.
I think we've had him on the station maybe once or twice. I think he's really a fun hockey analyst.
Yeah.
How are you, Mr. Duff? Brian Duff is here in studio. We're very excited about this.
You promised two wins, Howard, over the weekend. That was the deal for me to come
well,
in.
Well, actually, hold on a second. I just learned something really juicy off the air from Brian, which I had no idea about. I'm debating whether or not I want to tweet it, because if I tweet this, your timeline will blow up today.
No, it won't.
Brian is responsible for all the Sabres' lack of success. It's
now
his fault.
Why would you bring that
it's
up?
His fault. He worked in Edmonton when the Oilers were bad, and since he's been here, the Sabres have not made the playoffs. So it is his fault. You are the reason for the jinx.
I worked in Toronto when the Leafs were way too good, and I got so close to the Stanley Cup final in 2002, only to lose to Carolina.
Yeah, I didn't think you were.
Don't we know that feeling?
67 or so.
Yeah,
you're not that old.
No, not that far. Although, yeah,
you're to blame.
I'm to blame. Okay, I'll take one for the team.
You know, it's funny. I think Jack's right. You know, you guys would have had it yesterday on your Pulse Game show. There's no time for moral victories anymore. You need wins. You need points. And this was and still is a critical homestand. If you're going to pull a positive in defeat from the weekend, it is that in back-to-back games, they definitely tightened up their defensive performance. It was much, much better from the goalies to the defensemen to the forwards against Detroit and Winnipeg than it had been of late.
However, to the point of Jack Eichel, there are no moral victories.
Right, you didn't
so
win,
it's
so.
It really stings. You know, we kind of I feel like we've gotten a routine now when the post game show's done at the home games and we're walking out on the 200 level. We almost always pass Bill Hite and his family, and he was, I think, incredibly accurate in his very quick assessment as we walked by one another. and that was they were much better mm-hmm. Sunday than they were on Saturday, mm-hmm. and that's going to hurt. And it's true. I thought there was, you know, now Winnipeg, for as lofty as they are in the standings, they do have some shortcomings. We discussed that in the pregame. I mean, they give up way more shots and chances than most good teams do. I mean, the only three teams ahead of them as far as shots allowed are all non-playoff teams right now. But they also, in a different style NHL, and I don't know if I love the term heavy anymore. It's just the Jets are actually constructed. They are taller and heavier than an awful lot of teams. Right. And because they play with pace, you know, that they do, and when they want to lean on you, I mean, you saw examples of it, not through the whole game, but when Buffalo wants to send a message, mm-hmm. if you still want to use that, you know, old school phrase, they can really disrupt the game that way. Sure. So, and as we've seen in years past, sometimes when you go out of your way to do that, you give up chances, but their goaltending was better. It was not good in the past week, and thus they had come in losing three in a row, but Hellebuck looked really confident. And then at the end of the day, for me, it still comes down to the Sabres are just not a team that is blessed with an abundance of finishers right now. And watching an extended recap of the game last night, like, there were plenty of opportunities to mm-hmm. establish two or maybe even more goal lead against the Jets, and it never happened.
Well, for sure, you think about the power plays. I mean, you had some
the power
you
play
had
one, but yeah,
five. You had one. We had basically back to back power plays, and you could not add to anything.
You gave up a shorty,
You gave up a short, and actually, even on the first power play, they gave up two shorthanded opportunities that Hutton stopped before eventually, you know, Dahlin having his problems and giving up the shorthanded goal. But to me, I look at that. You finally got, you know, Hutton played well. And you did play well defensively. I honestly thought, I mean, against their top line, they did a good job. And then, of course, you had the crazy shift with 4 minutes to go where they're stuck in the zone for a minute and those guys score. But I liked all that. But again, I think you look back on it and go, it's a pretty tight checking game. When you get those 5-on-4s, you know, just got to do something. And they were, some of their power plays were just bad. They just didn't have any dangerous chances. They gained the zone. Eichel was good at carrying the puck in and gaining the zone and getting set up. But, you know, you look back on that and go, even if you didn't give up the shorthanded goal, you'd still look back at it and go, that's where you had your chance to sneak out one more goal. I would have loved. Can you get a 2-1 lead and then see if you can hang on in the end?
Yeah, and I mean, Eichel's goal came right after the power play expired, so it was a byproduct of it. Mm-hmm. I know people are and have been for years fixated on Jack's presence on his off wing so he can get the one-timer and, you know, all that comes with that position, but the more time goes on, the more I think Jack is more effective controlling the power play from the right side. Now, I don't want him to set up there continuously. I felt when O'Reilly and Eichel were orchestrating what was a much higher-ranked power play, I thought the reason for their success was because of their freelance ability out there. And I mean, when you think of the, you know, you go back to that Washington-Boston back-to-back weekend where Jack ripped them short side high, and we've seen, and those weren't power play, but there are so many more moments for me ingrained in my mind that Jack's had that success from the right wing position, which, you know, again, it may not seem like the best shooting position compared to the better angle that and view that he would get from his off wing. But his shot is so good. And when he's less predictable, like I don't know why, but he seems to not hit the net as often as you would like when he's shooting from that off-wing position. And I just find, you know, for a couple of years now, he's been really, really effective from the right-wing side. But it's not just the shot. It's how he views it. It's how he sets up others. And look, the power play is going to be a work in progress, obviously. They need it to win more games than not here down the stretch. But, you know, the real trouble yesterday, back to my original point about lack of finish, is that their bottom two lines had terrific analytics yesterday, and they had great opportunities, and they're, you know, they're just not blessed with an awful lot of finishers, and, you know, it makes me wonder when C.J. Smith gets back in.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We were talking about that earlier. Among the many storylines from the game, Brian Duffy's here. He's here the entire hour here in studio. Jeremy's off. He's back on Thursday, 8:03:05:50. If you want to talk Sabres, any kind of hockey comments, cool. Brian will share his opinions. And we were also talking about the Alliance and their debut over the weekend. If you saw any of the games and you want to talk about that, what you liked, what you didn't like, are you going to keep watching football? You can join us on that I mean, Brian knows about football. I mean, he'll give you CFL analysis.
I might know more about the Grammys from last night than the Alliance.
The Alliance? I didn't even see the Grammys. 8030550. Yeah, I didn't see the numbers at the end of the game, but as the game was going on in terms of high danger chances, the Sabres were much better than Winnipeg yesterday. And, you know, I thought, you know, Hellebuck played well for them. He's a big dude. Like, it doesn't seem like there's any open space when you're bearing down on Connor Hellebuck, but he played well. But I guess, in terms of offense, that's why I thought, to me, the power play stood out, Brian, because it just felt like, especially the third period, mm-hmm. the first 10 minutes of the third period was such a tight-checking, intense period. It was low shots. I think they combined for like 8 shots in the first 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Low shots, low scoring chances, both teams playing pretty tight hockey in a 1-1 game, trying to find a way to get that second goal. That's why I thought the power play was such a missed opportunity yesterday. Real estate at times was tough to come by in that game yesterday.
Yeah, and what had led to some of the success in the previous 4 games where they'd gone 5-for-10 after that incredibly long power play drought was the willingness to use Rasmus Dahlin more on the first unit than the second. That put Ristolainen on the second, which I think was good because that unit typically has more of a shooting mentality, and I thought it was working better because of the back-to-back power plays you talked about and an extended shift for Dahlin. You know, we saw a little bit of a change at one point yesterday, but the long story short here is that, and we don't say this very often, it was not a strong game by his standards for Rasmus Dahlin, right?
You're being kind.
So that's
He
had a rough day, but guess what? He's against a top three team in the NHL, and don't think that they don't know that.
Yeah.
And he was, all that being said, like there were still, I think, at least 3 wow moments where you see his bravery, if you want to say, putting himself in high danger spots in front of his own net, but never being afraid to make the move to get it out of the zone, which is still his biggest asset to this team, is getting it up the ice. But there were plays that also then turned around and caused them grief the other way.
Sure.
It's going to happen. That's where, you know, I just wish that there had been, you know, better contributions throughout the lineup and protecting him. But, I mean, to your point about the chances, look, different places use different measures as far as, you know, the analytics and that. But, you know, some that I'm looking at, they had 22 shots on goal from the slot. Mm-hmm. That is an enormous number, and it was twice what the Jets had.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to cash in.
Yeah, a lot of the Jets' stuff was perimeter. I thought the Sabres did a good job.
Exactly.
If you looked at the heat map,
and that's why
a lot of stuff was outside.
That's why Jack said what he said, that on that shift that led to the game-winning goal, as long as they were in the zone, they were defending it pretty well. But all of a sudden, when Morrissey got loose, even from his position, now it's a wonderful pass because he sees a guy wide open, but that guy on the doorstep shouldn't be wide open at that point.
Well,
right? And that's like the pick play is tough to accept.
Yeah,
but you can't lose.
Dahlin lets Wheeler peel off.
Right.
And he's, because he's right there on
him. Right there.
You know, if you go back and watch it before Morrissey curls and comes down, Dahlin is standing right in the crease on Blake Wheeler, and then Wheeler kind of slips off, turns to go to look at Hutton, and Dahlin gets caught watching Morrissey. And I don't
and Buck 43, I think, was the shift length for him and Hunwick at that point too.
And I don't know how much. I mean, that's honestly, that's puck watching was a big discussion Friday morning after what happened against Carolina. Mm-hmm. And I get it. If you're Dahlin, you see a Poso's trying to play catch up after the pick. So does Dahlin? Do you stay home? Do you go out because you think, okay, Morrissey's getting by a Poso, I've got to go get him, but then I've let Wheeler. So you're kind of stuck in no man's land there. Mm-hmm. But sure, in hindsight, you had Wheeler tied up. Take away the pass to Wheeler because he had an easy tap in.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's funny with Dahlin, and I want to get back to C.J. Smith because I forgot to ask you about him. With Dahlin, Brian, I think you do forget at times he's 18. Because he has played at such a level that you feel like this kid's been in the league for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just a young, quote, veteran defenseman. And yesterday was one of those days where puck hops, you know, a couple times at the point, he doesn't keep it in. It ends up as an empty net goal. It ends up as a shorthanded goal. There was a play on the power play where he's going point to point and he passes it outside the blue line. You got to come out and reset.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple bad passes in the defensive zone. There were turnovers. He lets Wheeler peel off him. So it was by his standards I think it was one of his worst days, quite honestly, this season by his standards. But you forget, our expectations have changed with him because he looks so comfortable playing a position that at 18, you're supposed to have more nights, more days like that than you aren't. You know, I mean, that should be, there are plenty of rocky moments for young defensemen. His are so few and far between that when they happen, you're like, ooh, rough day for Rasmus.
Well, and it just goes to show how important he is to the group of six back there. And you know, I think for the most part, the group's been good. I still don't know what it's going to look like moving forward with all these extra bodies right now.
Yeah, and when Nelson gets back.
And with the trade deadline coming up and, you know, there's an awful lot to sort out there without question. I want to say, you know, thinking back to some of Marty's comments post-game, the first time they played Winnipeg when they eked out the shootout win, I do believe that he didn't love Dahlin's game that night, but then they played back-to-back, and Dahlin was stunning in Minnesota the next night, and then the next game was in Pittsburgh, and he really struggled for the first two periods and racked up a dash four, and then had an unbelievable third period, and Buffalo ultimately came, you know, all the way back and won in overtime. That's what it is for an 18-year-old defenseman. And just be thankful that he has, I think, for me personally, he's exceeded expectations, which I know may sound stupid when you're talking about a number one pick that people are fawning over for an awfully long period of time, but I think I've seen enough of the games over the years to know that you can't expect 18-year-old defensemen to come in here and be that good, but he's been that good.
Yeah. And
you're and gonna, he'll you, be 18 through the entire regular season.
Right. You know, and we also know that clearly he's not at the ceiling of his game. It's incredible when you think about where this kid can go. And also, I think, you know what, and I'll learn to live with the mistakes because he is trying to make plays. And we know how good he is in terms of carrying the puck out or breakout passes. We love when he gets aggressive on offense and he drives to the net. So, you know, the not keeping the puck in at the left point, that happens to defensemen in the National Hockey League. This just in. I will live with some of the errors because I want to see this guy continue to play with an aggressive mindset. He is a big point of a huge point of this hockey team, and I don't want him to play tentative and worrisome. Oh man, are they going to bench me? Am I going to lose ice time if I turn the puck over? I don't want that creeping into his head.
Right, and again, to the point of not a ton of finishers on the team.
Right.
Think of what Dahlin's numbers could be. The number of times he has set up people. Perhaps unexpectedly, you know, because he does the wow things and it's hard to read. And again, this is a building thing. Like when your core guys and, you know, some who might not be in the core yet, you know, when they figure out how good he is and what they can do because of how good he is, his numbers are going to rise. And hopefully it just, you know, again, it gets this team back on the winning side of the one-goal games because that's been problematic.
You mentioned C.J. Smith. I want to ask you about him because Brayton and I are having this discussion earlier, and Brian Duff is here in studio, 803-0550. I like to see him play. You bring up a guy from Rochester, what the heck? Just play him. Let's see what he can do. And I don't mean this as, you know, you've talked about how this team is still in search of offense. It's been better. I mean, the defense has been the bigger problem than the offense for the last month, but you bring a guy like that who has offensive ability up, play him. I just, you know, play him a game or two and then he's in the press box. What's the freaking point? The problem, I guess, with this is, you know, so you knew they were going to try and bring back Thompson, I assume, right? The problem, I think, is who is Housley scratching? He is very, Sobolka will be the name every Sabre fan will bring up. But, you know, as much as it makes sense, you look at it and go, Housley's not scratching this guy. If he hasn't scratched him after 40-whatever games without a goal, what makes you think he's going to pull him out of the lineup? He's a defensive zone faceoff guy. He's one of your top penalty killers. And the argument is, well, that's Larson. I mean, you got that. Do you have to have two guys occupy those spots? And I would agree. But the problem with I'd play C.J. Smith, but as I said, you're Phil Housley. Who are you taking out?
You've already said it. So,
like, he's not 37, 43, 23, not coming out. 21, not coming out. 71, playing well, certainly not coming out. 72, they put back in.
And so I thought
either,
he was good
yesterday. It's either 17, 22, or 28. And I think there are all three guys, Housley sees some kind of value that they bring to the point where he's going to let the kid from Rochester sit. And I think that's a mistake. I'd love to see C.J. Smith play to see what he can do.
I have no argument, and I'm as surprised, and I don't surprise easily, but I just think when you lay out what Sobotka has been to this team, and again, the hardest part is having played the game for as long as Phil did, and for you are always loyal to guys who have been around longer. I get that. It's just CJ had actually scored twice in the previous three NHL
some nice
games.
Things. Yeah, and he showed some good stuff. Yeah.
So it's hard, but now they have lost a couple here. I mean, they could have been on a four-game point streak very easily. They could have still lost to Winnipeg yesterday, but been 2-0-2 in the last four, mm-hmm. which would feel an awful lot better than what transpired yesterday. Mm-hmm. It's a tricky time. Again, the trade deadline's going to sort an awful lot of this stuff out as far as, you know, who to call up when, what more can you add. I understand the frustration right now of fans wanting to see a little bit more in the way of call-ups, but I do think they've been really, really good at managing the Rochester side of the mm-hmm. equation. Like, I want to see Victor Olofsson as a Sabre at
you
some point,
Victor
too.
You mean Victor Golofsson.
Right, yeah. But I don't need to see him just yet.
Yeah.
And I think the plan for him and Asplund has worked out perfectly. And if we see them, especially Olofsson, I don't think we're seeing Asplund this year mm-hmm. unless they have a catastrophic run of injuries. You know, it's fine for me the way Olofsson's being used and groomed. But I think Smith has earned his time, and I would love to see him back in the lineup.
When we get back, Brian Duff is with us in studio. So, you know, we've been talking about a little bit about the offense and trying to find another line. I want to ask you about Sherry, Mittelstadt, Reinhardt.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of good things, I think, to talk about in the little time they've been together in this last week or so. I want to bring that line up with you. Sabres questions, comments, 803-0550. Hey, did you watch any of the Alliance games over the weekend? What did you think? Worthwhile? We'll watch more. What did you like? What didn't you like? We can talk some football as well since, you know, there's still professional football going on. Hey, before we go to break, let's give away our gift card for Ted's. We're going to talk about our Ted's Hot Player of the Week here. We identified the player last hour. And if you know who it is, call now for your chance to win. 644-9878. We'll start with caller number 5, and we'll take the first correct caller to identify the Ted's Hot Player of the Week. If that is you, you win a $50 gift card to Ted's Hot Dogs. And I am free for lunch. 644-9878. I'd like a couple jumbos and some fries, please. 644-9878 for your chance to win the Ted's gift card. More with Mr. Duff in a moment on WGR.
We can take the moral victory anymore. I mean, we're 55 games in the year. How many times can we say, oh, we played well, but we didn't get any points? So, I mean, other teams are getting points, moving up the standings. We're not. So, like, the moral victories are a thing of the past at this point. I mean, we don't get any points, and they win the game. So, back at it Tuesday night.
That is Jack Eichel, some of his comments in the postgame locker room. If you missed any of the postgame interviews, the postgame show with Brian Koziol, all of that's available in on-demand audio at WGR550.com. More with Brian Duff here in studio in a moment. And an important text from one Paul Hamilton that I'll have to get to on the show. The Sabres lost to Winnipeg. No moral victory, no points. 3-1 the final yesterday. Blake Wheeler gets the game-winning goal with 3:55 left. They had an empty net goal. Eichel scores the only goal for the Sabres, his 18th of the season. Carter Hutton played well yesterday, 27 saves. The Sabres played without Zach Bogosian. He is listed as day-to-day with a lower body injury. Out-of-town scoreboard. No bad news. I mean, Carolina lost, so that's good. Pittsburgh did not play. More on that in a moment. Islanders are here tomorrow night. They beat Minnesota 2-1. Boston beat Colorado 2-1. And the Ducks fired Randy Carlyle. Bob Murray, the GM. I guess Jim is GM. Is going to be the interim coach the rest of the season. The Penguins, the Sabres, by losing yesterday, missed out on a chance to tie Pittsburgh for the second wild card spot. Actually, you know what? Hang on. Let me finish headlines. Canisius beat St. Peter's. Niagara lost to Iona. I know. Duff's laughing at me right now like, I just, my brain sometimes bounces all over. And I don't have ADHD, but yet, let's see. Yeah, that's pretty much all you need to know. Those are your key headlines brought to you by Air National Guard. Get military training, serve close to home, and protect others all over the world. It's time to take off. Find out more at goang.com/now or call 1-800-TOGOANG. The Penguins are bad right now. And the Sabres would have tied them. You know how I knew that? Because I heard Brian talk about it on the postgame show yesterday with Marty. So they would have tied them. They're 2 points behind them. They're 1 point behind Carolina. The Penguins have lost four straight, 6 of 8, and 8 of 10. 8 of 11. In those 11 games, they have given up 45 goals. Matt Murray's been injured. Casey DeSmith played the last two games. But even with Murray, this is such a weird Pittsburgh Penguins team, Brian. They were horrible earlier this season. They're giving up goals by the bushel. Murray was injured. They were struggling. Then they turn around. They go on fire. They rip off a great stretch of winning hot. We go, up. Penguins are back. And now they've lost 8 of 11, and they can't keep the puck out of the net again. In fact, the Penguins, the Sabres come from behind win in Pittsburgh was in that stretch where they were giving up like 4 goals a game. It's a very strange team to figure out. Before I get to your thoughts on the middle stat line, when you look at the wild card race, you think it will come down to Sabres, Pittsburgh, Carolina? Do we throw Columbus in there? How do you think that last wild card spot plays out?
Yeah, Columbus is in a spot and just had a terrific Western trip, faced an awful lot of challenging moments, including being down 3-2 in the final 10 minutes in Vegas the other night and managed to win it in regulation time. The biggest question, of course, with Columbus is what happens with Panarin and Bobrovsky pre-deadline, and does that then signal a waving of the flag if they part with them? But if they keep them and roll the dice, then there's no reason to believe that that team still can't be a little bit better, because they've had some underachievers offensively that, you know, could, I'm sure that's what they're hoping, could wake up in time before this regular season is done. Look, common sense says you don't want to be chasing Pittsburgh for the final spot, but reality says, boy, it would be nice to chase Pittsburgh for the final spot, because people have, the Sabres haven't been chasing anybody at this time of year for a long time now. So you've got two more meetings with the Pens, both of them here in Buffalo. And if you're going to exercise some demons, why not win those and you know, like they won unexpectedly in Pittsburgh this year. Just find a way to keep chipping away, because you never know what other teams are going through. You just referenced how all of a sudden Pittsburgh looks to be un-Penguin-like at the moment, and the Penguins have their biggest challenge of the year tonight against the hottest team in the league in Philadelphia. You know, Philly's 9-0-1 in the last 10. Philly will be 2 points behind Buffalo if they beat the Penguins tonight, but I think everybody wants them to beat the Penguins tonight, so stay that you know, close to them.
But when you look at Columbus, too, I mean, remember, they, you know, so that they were not, they really weren't playing well coming out of the bye. The Sabres had gone in there and they won, and Tortorella's furious, and he was right. Their game was garbage that night. They lose 5 straight, 3 of them coming out of the bye. They're giving up goals like crazy. They go out west, boom, boom, boom. Colorado, Arizona, Vegas, and 3 straight wins. And just like that, Columbus seems to have righted the ship for the time being.
For a time being, but as we probably can apply to just about every team, it only lasts so long.
Yep.
Although, I would say people have been waiting for the shoe to drop on Montreal for a while now.
And it's not. Yeah, I keep waiting for them to just
come back.
Guess what?
They got legit, long-standing all-stars that came back and stabilized the team. Shea Weber and Carey Price. Yeah. And I don't like it for Montreal that Carey Price is just starting his extension this year at more than $10 million. But guess what? If they make the playoffs this year and he gets right back into where Carey Price typically has been, then the investment looks like a wise one.
Quick side note, I got to do the research. Maybe you know this off the top of your head. Toronto played Montreal, would it have been Saturday night? And people were tweeting about how, boy, that would be a fun playoff series. Yeah. And I was trying to think, when's the last time the Leafs and Canadiens played?
I think it's 1979, if memory serves correct. When I worked at Leafs TV years ago, I feel like that was, you know, a talking point. Only because, remember, for years, Toronto was in the Western Conference, and that wasn't a possibility. And, you know,
And they moved east and they weren't good for a long time.
Right. One or the other wasn't particularly good, so it was never matching up. But I will say this, even in those years, late in the regular season, it always seemed like one team had something at stake and the other was there because of Hockey Night in Canada. They were going to get them on a Saturday night in a meaningful game for one of them, and you would never have known that one of them wasn't in the hunt, because the intensity in those games, and I'm sure you recognize this too, it's almost always a split crowd in Montreal and Toronto when those two teams meet, not unlike what we see in the games in Buffalo. It's infuriating here in this market when the Leaf fans come in the way they do, but history being what it is, with Toronto and Montreal for over 100 years, it's not surprising that it's split the way it is.
That would be fabulous.
It would be. I mean, why? Because one of them would be out.
Well, yeah, too. I mean, that's. I honestly think I'd end up rooting for Montreal. I was thinking about, and you would know this better being an Ontario native, like when Toronto would play Ottawa in the playoffs, it was played up as just such a big thing. I would think
it was not
that's
real.
Nothing
no.
compared to Toronto-Montreal would be,
believe me,
would
the market
drive
of Toronto
two provinces
could care less
crazy.
About Ottawa. I mean, they got frustrated by the fact that Ottawa had a decade of just ridiculously good regular seasons. So that was annoying to them, but I don't think anybody in Toronto ever really cared about the matchup.
Yeah.
They really didn't. And then they laughed at it because they would beat them all the time in the playoffs when it was supposed to be Ottawa's year.
Yeah.
And the only reason Ottawa ever got to the final in
07,
but also they the Senators had long runs in the years that they missed Toronto early in the playoffs. Mm. And that's what it comes down to. Now, you play who you have to play. I get it.
Sure.
But, yeah.
Hey, Mittelstadt, Reinhardt, Sherry.
Showing really good things.
A lot of positives, yeah.
And I think largely because of Sam, quite frankly.
I think with him,
yeah.
The discussion with him is really interesting. He's having, in terms of day one to where we are now, he's having the best season of any Sabre, right? Consistent. Start of the season to now.
It was quiet at times at the start. That was frustrating, you know.
But he's been, a consistent producer. I think the discussion with him has gone from, you're okay with him coming off of the Eichel-Skinner line, because now Reinhardt is the guy where we say, you know, you put him, we used to say this with Jack. Whoever's slumping, throw him on with Jack. They'll be fine. You can say that with Reinhardt. You put him on maybe any line, and he's going to make that line better. What do you like? I think against Detroit than yesterday, but whatever. What do you like about 37-43, 23 together? What do you? Because I think they bring a lot of energy. I like their forecheck. There's some creativity in the offensive zone with them. What are some of the things you've seen from them?
Well, a lot of what you just said. I really just think that Sam is trusting of those guys, but also encouraging of those guys to work to their strengths. And we've seen increased production from Sherry and Mittelstadt. And it's not coming in like huge amounts right now, where you're seeing those guys rattle off multi-point games. And I think that's what you're going to need ultimately, because you need somebody beyond the top line on certain nights. Mm-hmm. To just own a game, win a game, and, you know, if the line combines for 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 points, then you're really going to take notice of them. But in its infancy right now, I think it's been good, and it's just, my hope is that it can stay together. I think you're still going to need to tweak, like we talked about earlier, how can CJ Smith work in here? Like, I think Paul Monville's been pretty good, again, with Jack and with Jeff, but I think you could get more out, and again, that's where the temptation to bring Reinhardt back up there is always there. But can it be one of the younger players like a Smith, or if Olofsson gets called up, can somebody like that? Because I still think Pominville can help balance and stabilize at the bottom end of it too.
He had some good chances yesterday,
and you know, so we'll see. I feel like there's just a trust and a respect at a very early stage here between the three of them. And that's, you know, that's seeing what you see on the ice, but also what you kind of glean off the ice from the guys too. And that's really good to see, because I think sometimes we wondered, where does Sam fit in all of this? He was drafted as this. Is he going to be this? Point-wise, as you said, he's on a career pace right now, and going all the way back to, you know, a year ago, January 1st, he's been remarkably consistent, and I think still is slightly ahead of Eichel in points in that period of time. Obviously, Jack has missed some time due to injury, but it should not be overlooked that Sam's basically a top 35 scorer in the league the last 14 months.
Well, he's already set a career high for assists. I want to say, you guys had the graphic on the telecast.
He's right there. He was
one point away from his career high.
Did he get a point
right
yesterday?
Now?
I can't remember.
I know, because he was one point away from his career high.
Skinner and Dahlin on the only goal.
So he's sitting at 49, I think, and his career high is 50, which he'll shatter.
Obviously.
You know, unless he gets hurt. He'll shatter that. You know, I forgot to ask this earlier when we were talking about the Winnipeg game. I know you and Marty discussed it on your postgame show. So, Scheifele get away with a pick? Were you not necessarily? I was not surprised that they're not going to call that with 4 minutes to go in a tie game.
Yeah, I'm not either. I mean, every good team historically in the league works that type of play, whether it's up high or whether it's in the corner. I hate, you know, seeing them be in this position to have to answer after a loss. But you're not going to get a more genuine commentary on how the game played out than what Kyle Opposo delivered, mm-hmm. because not only through the words, but through the emotion expression, in his face and the expression. And he was obviously asked about that exact play, given that he was the one who was picked. And it really just kind of rolled off of him. It was, even though I was out there for a long period of time, even though that may have happened, he felt like he still had to do a better job on Morrissey after that, that there was still time to recover, which is funny in the sense that there really wasn't much time, like probably less than 2 seconds after the pick happens. The pass is already coming across to Dahlin, so I don't know. But the point is Kyle felt like it was his responsibility to, A, either avoid the contact, B, make a better play after the pick. And that's ownership. And hopefully, down the road, these are moments where if somebody else in the room is paying attention, you need to look at yourself first before you make excuses and pass it on to someone else.
That's a tough play, though, from Opposo's. And I'm not trying to give him an out, but I mean, it happens so fast. And he's kind of keying on Morrissey, and all of a sudden, Scheifele peels around. I mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Was it Scheifele or Wheeler that had a mild slew foot kind of trip
Wheeler?
At the blue line
that put
on
the Sabres offside?
Yeah.
It was Wheeler.
Annoyed by that and immediately launched into a tirade with Marty next to me.
I was too.
And he's like, no, he's entitled to the space and it's a fine play and whatever.
I agree
whatever.
With you. That bothered
me because
it knocked him offside.
But that's the thing. Like, you can play dumb,
right?
But it's like, you know 100% what the result of this is going to be if I simply get in the way, and sure enough, offside.
Right.
And yeah. So,
I agree. No, I honestly, that bothered me more. And I think part of it is because first off, I've seen the pick play not called. Mm-hmm. And as I said,
you watched the Habs dynasty of the 70s, did you? And the Red Wings through the late 2000s?
So it happens.
Yeah.
But also, you know, the frustrating part of that sequence wasn't for me as much, hey, you got to call that, was, hey, get the puck out of the zone. I mean, you're stuck in there for a minute. Mm-hmm. And Skinner has a chance on the boards. He doesn't chip it out. Yep. Dahlin has a chance on the boards. He doesn't get it out. So there was stuff leading up to the pick on Opposo where if you got the puck out, hey, look, if Hunwick doesn't turn the puck over, you get your changes. And these guys aren't stuck on the ice.
Yeah,
for
that was, I don't even
get the puck in
Matt.
Deep.
I mean,
no,
Matt was on the wrong side of center, so he was putting in an area for Kyle to touch and deflect, and then presumably change would have happened. And as Marty said, Kyle got too much of the blade on the puck, slowed it down as opposed to deflecting it deep. Oh, yeah. And then before you know it,
you're stuck. They gain the zone and you can't get out.
Yeah.
So. All right, Brian is here for one more segment. When we get back, I'm going to bring up something that'll make Paul Hamilton angry. 803-0550 to join us, 888-550-2550 on WGR.
The big one that has to make a decision here is Matt Duchene, because there have been extensive talks this week with his agent, Pat Brisson, and the Senators general manager, Pierre Dorion. A lot of those discussions actually have been about the future of the franchise, what they're expecting in terms of their window to get back to respectability, things going on at the arena, and really comes down to now is what Matt Duchene wants. And he hasn't been given a firm deadline from the Senators when he has to make his choice, but with the side set to talk again on Monday, he knows this is coming to a head. And I should mention, guys, he really does love it in Ottawa. Even if he weren't to sign now and was traded at the deadline, I don't think he'd rule out a potential return on July 1st as a free agent.
That is Chris Johnston from Sportsnet. Trade deadline approaching. Ottawa, just one of the fascinating stories out there, what they do with Matt Duchene and with Stone as well, both pending free agents to be. Brian Duff sticking around for one more segment. I did get a tweet from Randall who said, why does Duffer not have his own weekly morning segment? I vote he should. I'm going to let you... No, I'll take you behind the scenes a little bit. We can't afford him.
And Alan Davis just, and I have a history, so...
Yeah, well, you know, two crazy Canadians is enough for me. So I got a text from someone by the name of Paul Hamilton, who was listening earlier this hour. And of course, since Paul texted this, this is like when you have a little kid and you tell them not to do something. Of course they're going to do that. I mean, just don't tell them that. So Paul texted in and said... I don't want to hear about Brian's Astros.
Is he nervous or something? Do they think they're going to regain the crown? I mean,
now that their
slogan this year is take it back.
Oh, is that right? Because he knows that if his Yankees get to the World Series, yes, God forbid, they'll lose to your Astros. Clearly, he's
I'm already dreading the thought of losing to the Phillies in the World Series.
Bite your tongue. Bite your tongue, says the Met fan across the table from you. Baseball is coming down. You know, report this week.
Yeah, I'm pretty pumped about it.
You should be.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe, you know what? Hey, maybe it'll be the Mets and the Astros in the playoffs if the Mets turn things around this season.
That has never historically worked out well for the Astros, so let's not go there.
Yeah, I won't bring up 86.
Right, or 80.
Where were you in 86? Were you an Astros fan back then?
Yeah, but the problem was, I mean, you were living in an era where you didn't, like... Yeah, the only way I felt like growing up near Toronto, like the Astros were this fantasy. Like I love Nolan Ryan, but you never saw them. I mean, you were living in a world where you were looking at the TV guide every week and it said New York versus Los Angeles or Cincinnati, Houston. And guess what? We never got the or, you know, so if it wasn't for Mel Allen and this week in baseball, like I never would have been able to see anything.
Wow. You're barking up my alley there, dude.
Yeah, I know.
Mel Allen, this week in baseball.
Our hairlines are similar, Howard. So,
no, but, you know, but this was pre baseball's on every night.
I know.
And no,
it was once a week,
extra
Joe Garagiola,
innings package.
Tony Kubek,
so you used baseball highlights on Saturday to find out what the heck was going on around the league. So I was in Toledo at the time. I was working in Toledo at the time. That series, of course, then they go on and have the crazy series with the Red Sox. But that playoff series was one of the most draining sports experiences for me ever in my history as a fan, the series with the Astros. I mean, to this day, if I ever watch, like, if they show the final game on, you know, ESPN Classic, whatever, you look back and go, oh, my Lord, how did I survive watching that game? Well, I was a basket case.
That was 2 years ago being in Houston for Game 5.
Unreal. I had a rooting interest because I don't like the Yankees when they played them. But yeah, that was, you know, it's an intense, intense experience.
Yeah, so. Baseball's been fortunate. They've had some incredible playoffs in recent years. Yep. I mean, the Game 7 with the Cubs and the Indians is magical for so many reasons. And then, you know, for the Astros and Dodgers to follow it up the way they did. And then this year you had an 18-inning game. You know, like, it's just, it's really been great. But I think we're headed for Armageddon in baseball based on these guys not being signed.
Yeah.
You know, there's a
no
lot of
Harper,
talk of
no
collusion
Machado.
And all this stuff. So
that'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, just shut her down for another year.
It's not like they haven't gone down that road before.
No, but they've been wise ever since. And that's the problem. I feel like, you know, I wish that hockey would have figured it out kind of like baseball did after.
Hey, but knock on wood, so far with the hockey CBA, things seem to be positive.
I'm hoping that because Seattle's coming in that they'll have their head on
straight. Why would you want to lock out? Well, the players could walk out, they suppose, or the owners could lock out. But why would you do that when you got $750 million, $650, whatever the fee is
going to
be.
There's never a good answer for any of this. Yeah. So.
Hey, thanks for coming in.
Oh, my pleasure.
You know, you're always welcome here.
Okay.
So, you got any good dirt on Marty before we leave? Like, you know, is he a prima donna to work with? Like, do you have to, like, does he have, like, people have to take care of his every need?
Well, I'd only be able to answer that if he allowed me to spend more time with him.
Okay, it's but not something you could jam in at the end of an hour.
No, he's, no, I mean, like, I would tell you more about him, but his handlers keep me away from him. So, like, I can't get on the inside.
The almighty Baron and his people kind of keep you away.
His trailer is pretty impressive from what I've seen, but,
It's right next to the parking garage, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Brian Duff, who does an excellent job on the Sabres broadcast, joining us here in studio. We'll talk some more Sabres, get back to our football discussions all coming up. I actually did want to bring up, since Brian and I were talking baseball, I wanted to bring up some rules ideas. They're kicking around as pitchers and catchers report this week. We'll get to that too as well. 803-0550 WGR.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O' Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Oh, oh.